everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church in Bellevue, Nebraska, and Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corumdale Church in Omaha. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we are talking about punishment versus rehabilitation.
Listen, listeners, I'm just going to be straight with you. I went down a rabbit hole this past week.
and that's where this topic came from.
So there's a number of threads here that either are or aren't going to cohere together.
Before you dive in, you got to tell them how you got there.
Do you want me to?
Yeah. You were studying
I was reading an article on the atonement.
This is how your brain works.
And then you started sending us weird websites.
We were like, what?
Which
is going on?
Bob Thune conspiracy.
Mentioned in the article on atonement, it was linked to, there was a footnote of a C.S. Lewis piece that I had never read, which I went and read that. That reminded me of something I had seen on Twitter a few days before, so I went to that website, and that got me down the rabbit hole in another website that had to do with neurocorrectives, which we'll get to in a minute. So, yeah, it was basically like I started reading the footnotes, and then
every time I start reading the footnotes, it just takes me
deep into the hole. So, but this is actually a really fascinating topic theologically, because the theological topic I was reading about was retributive justice. In other words, does the Bible teach that God punishes sin, that God's justice requires retribution, right? That was the question. And the author referenced this C.S. Lewis article that I had never read before, and I sent it to you guys. It's 6 or 7 pages. It must be just an essay that he wrote somewhere. But it's called the humanitarian theory of punishment. And Lewis is making the case that if we take away retribution, the idea of punishment, then we take away the idea of justice. And so here's the simple argument he's making, which I think is fascinating to think about. He says, justice is about right and wrong, and retributive justice means if you've done the crime, you should do the time. But that whatever you've done, there's a commensurate just punishment that you should have to serve because of that. He says that understanding of justice, which is a very time-tested historic understanding of justice that goes all the way back to the Bible and has been very common in cultures, has been replaced in the modern world with what he calls a humanitarian theory of punishment, which is basically to punish a man because he deserves it is just revenge. And therefore, it's immoral. What we should be doing is trying to rehabilitate people who are criminals or who have violated laws. And C.S. Lewis says, when we go there, the idea of mending, right? When we believe that crime is essentially pathological, something's wrong with you and we should fix you, we become healers or curers instead of judges. And now we're operating in a different category. And so what he says is only when we think about justice in terms of retribution are we actually dealing in the categories of justice and mercy. So biblically, we could say God judges our sin because it deserves punishment, or God is able to show us mercy in Christ because that is appropriate and it's a manifestation of his justice. When we start going in the direction of if you've broken a law, it must be because you're sick and we need to heal you, now we're not working in categories of justice anymore. And he says it actually is immoral toward the people that we're dealing with, and it's unjust. It's a really fascinating argument that I'd never read before. And let me read you a couple quotes from Lewis. C.S. Lewis frames out what he understands to be this humanitarian idea that's taken over sort of modern culture. He says, I think it essential to oppose the humanitarian theory of punishment wherever we encounter it. It carries on its front a semblance of mercy which is wholly false. The older view was that mercy tempered justice, or, on the highest level of all, that mercy and justice had met and kissed. The essential act of mercy was to pardon. And pardon in its very essence involves the recognition of guilt and ill desert in the recipient. But if crime is only a disease which needs cure and not sin which deserves punishment, it cannot be pardoned. The humanitarian theory wants simply to abolish justice and substitute mercy for it. This means that you start being kind to people before you have considered their rights, and then force upon them supposed kindnesses which they in fact had a right to refuse, and finally, kindnesses which no one but you will recognize as kindnesses and which the recipient will feel as abominable cruelties. Mercy, detached from justice, grows unmerciful. So here's what's fascinating about that last section where he says, if you start being kind to people before you consider their rights, then you start forcing upon them supposed kindnesses which they had a right to refuse. That got me down the rabbit hole of this whole new exploration in ethics about what are called neurocorrectives or neurointerventions. And basically what this is people, these are real scholars working in the realm of legal theory and medicine who are saying, okay, so let's say, for instance, you have a criminal who's very violent, and we can show that if we give this criminal XYZ drug, it reduces their propensity to violence. Is it not, therefore, in the best interest of society for us to give you that drug and therefore reduce the probability that you will commit a violent crime again? And so there's a whole field of legal theory that's arguing, just like we deal with public health crises. So let's take something like the Ebola virus and say you're quarantined and you're segmented off from society against your will because it's good for the greater good. We have to quarantine this illness so that it does not affect others. And we recognize that as a morally good thing to do, that even if I have to, Chris, lock you to a bed for a week at the UNMC Medical Center surrounded by, you know, a bunch of people in hazmat suits, whether you want that or not, we're going to do that because it's the right thing to do for the city of Omaha to prevent this from spreading. These theorists are saying in the same way, if it's right for us as a society to give you drugs to reduce your violent tendencies, then we must do that and should do that, and it's morally right for us to do that, which sounds exactly like what Lewis is saying, that now we're forcing upon you supposed kindnesses, take these drugs, which you have a right to refuse, but we're not going to let you anymore because, after all, we're trying to rehabilitate you. And so since we're trying to make you a better person, since we're not concerned about you doing punishment for your crime, but we're more concerned about rehabilitating you, now we're going to force upon you a supposed kindness that actually begins to violate your rights as a human being. So this is fascinating to me because what I found was Lewis wrote this article, whatever, 50 or 60 or 70 years ago, and the very thing he's talking about is like a live question right now in medical ethics, and that fascinated me to think about if we move away from justice as retribution, of, hey, you did this crime, and here's how many years in jail you deserve, and we start going in the direction of rehabilitation, which is, by the way, where most of the dialogue I hear is going in that direction. I'm just like, okay, great, these people are offenders, but how do we rehabilitate them and make them productive members of society again? Now, is that longing right? Yes, it's right. But what's interesting is Lewis says, as soon as we stop asking questions about punishment and only ask questions about healing or rehabilitation, now we're in muddy categories because we are no longer talking about what's just, but talking about what would fix you, what would cure you, what would make you a better person, what's safer and better for the world. What do we have permission to do to you against your will because it's good for us and good for you? Mm-hmm. Trust us.
So here's where some of the nuances of this are interesting to me. And I'll admit, I wrestle with this topic because for several reasons. But one, so if we just sort of take the pure sort of theology philosophy of retribution, like you've done this wrong and there needs to be a punishment, moral punishment, and so justice. Like I'm completely there. Like I agree with that. Where it begins to get interesting for me is, okay, I can punish you, and let's say I'm in jail for 20 years and then I'm out. I've done the time. What are the likelihood, what are the chances that I'm going to repeat?
Right.
And so in some ways, the rehabilitation question, at least I've heard it framed more, is less of a moving away from this idea that they need to be punished, and more like, hey, we can punish them and that's right and good, but we let them out in 20 years, let this person out in 20 years, they're going to go commit the crime. And so we're back at this. And so the rehabilitation comes in a sense of like, how do we keep this person from repeat offending so that for the sake of society, they're not, they go out and they do something bad again, and then it costs the taxpayer money to have to, you know, try them and house them in prison. So there's this recognition that punishment alone can't change behavior. Oh man, I don't want to sit in jail for 20 years. So I'm not going to do X, Y, Z. Well, that I think is part of it. It's not, I think more and more people are saying it's not necessarily sufficient, or it's not strong enough in some cases. And so there has to be this other question of how do we help people change to a degree that they're not going to do that. So that's how I've heard the conversation, at least in some of the things, conversations in circles I've had recently. And so that's where it gets interesting to me, because is that the role of the government to do that? Or is the role of the government said, well, I'm going to punish you, and then you go to, you know, here's some resources, you know, don't do this again, or you'll be in jail again.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know the answer to that question. That's a fascinating question. But I've heard the conversations in the same way you just said, but it feels to me like it's moving more and more in the direction of who cares about punishment? That's the wrong question. We should only be asking the question of how do we rehabilitate people? Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's where I agree. We can ask both questions. We can ask what's a just punishment and how do we keep you from reoffending? Are there helpful tools to rehabilitate you? But I feel like the conversations culturally are moving more and more in the direction of just forget punishment altogether. It seems to me.
Yeah. No. I think that's, on the whole, I think that's right.
Let me read you another quote from Lewis, because I think it sort of gets at something you just said. He says, only the psychotherapist can tell us what is likely to cure. It will be vain for the rest of us speaking simply as humans to say, but this punishment is hideously unjust, hideously disproportionate to the criminal's deserts. The experts will reply, but nobody was talking about deserts. No one was talking about punishment in your archaic, vindictive sense of the word. Here are the statistics proving that this treatment deters. Here are the statistics proving that this other treatment cures. What is your trouble? So what he's saying is, when we're talking about categories of punishment, at least the whole society can agree, hey, 20 years seems like a valid punishment, or no, that's too harsh, we should rethink that. So he's saying, like, there's a sense in which all people in a society get to speak into what's just and fair when it comes to how we punish people. But as soon as we move into the realm of how do we cure people, now we're like ceding the ground to experts who say, well, trust us, we did this psychological study, or we did this pharmacological study, and this drug has this success rate, and therefore we should give it in this situation. And now that takes the capacity for sort of reform out of the hands of society and puts it in the hands of experts. And it's interesting, because I think he's getting at, like, if you even look at the world of big pharma, right? And like, who's going to be making the decisions about what drugs get used and how they get used.
Right.
It starts to get pretty fuzzy whether I feel good about that, especially if you start thinking about what are the side effects of these drugs, what are the long-term costs, right? So he's basically saying, hey, at least if we're talking about punishment and justice, we're talking about a category that everybody in a society has a voice in. Once we start talking about cure, we really limit the number of people who get to speak into whether this cures or that cures or doesn't cure.
Yeah, I'm thinking through, even the language of how we decide what's just punishment has started to shift, because it's, okay, we're deciding 20 years. How are we determining that? Well, 20 years seems to be the right amount of time by which this lowers the repeat offender, or this is going to give them enough time to do this or this or this. And so we're even thinking in terms of not, is this just unjust, but is this amount of time, does it fit within a program of rehabilitation? So and even in the way that we're trying to draw the lines of justice in punishment is taking on more of that rehabilitation language, which becomes scary when you consider it's going into the hands of a select few of quote unquote experts.
Let me read you from a research paper that gets at that question. We shall suggest that some chemical interventions might be permissible if they safely and effectively served to facilitate the offender's rehabilitation and thereby prevent criminal recidivism. The argument these authors are making is not only that these interventions would be permissible, but that we can give them to you without your permission. So they're actually trying to make an argument that, like, Chris, if you're a violent offender and we have a drug that we know with medical proof will reduce violence or would reduce your sort of violent urges, whether you want that drug or not, we as a society get to give it to you because it's good for the greater whole. That starts to get really creepy to me because I just feel like we're treading on some ground there that we've just moved away from, like, what's just punishment for the crime you just committed that was violent and wrong, mm-hmm. to, like, what permission do we have as the society around you to give you drugs against your will that will be better for us? We're just getting into weird control there.
Yeah, because even rehabilitation, how it's used within the criminal justice system, is an alternative to punishment. You don't want to sit in jail for 20 years, enter this program. Right. And so if you don't want to go into the program, then you're going to jail.
Right.
And so this is, you don't want to take the drugs? Tough. Yep. We're shooting you full of the drugs. So that, like, talk about Big Brother right there, 1984, freaking me out.
Yeah. Well, and it seems to be driven out of, right? Let's acknowledge there is good advances in medical science and especially neurology that do say, man, brain chemistry matters in these things, right? So like your brain chemistry does have mm-hmm. some effect on how you act and how you feel and, you know, all of that. So let's not throw that out. But does that mean that we now that we know that we as a society have freedom to alter your brain chemistry if it's good for us? That's where in my mind the questions start to get thorny. And I'm not sure what a Christian response to this should be. What does being made in the image of God, what does the basic concept of human rights have to say to the whole question of, can you alter the chemistry of my body without my permission if it's good for society?
So here's where I'm going to wax a little conspiracy theorist here for a second.
Chris,
it gets conspiracy. Weird. Here's where it gets weird because, okay, so think of this and just kind of in the trajectory of where our society's going. So what they're proposing right now is if you break the law in some way, a violent offender, maybe, you know, a sexual offense, then I'm going to give you a chemical that's going to try to bring down that impulse. Well, what happens when ideas get outlawed?
Yeah.
And so certain things, you know, for me as a Christian, my stance for sexual ethics says I disagree with homosexual marriage. And when those things start to become outlawed, again, here's where the conspiracy comes in. Could my punishment be, hey, I'm going to give you a chemical to make you less of a certain type of bigotry?
Mm. We're going
to
make you more tolerable.
Yeah, so we're going to start giving chemicals to sort of rid you of your ideas and your beliefs. I mean, that's straight out of like dystopian literature right there. So if that's where this could potentially go, that's where it gets weird. And so again, I acknowledge this is a bit conspiracy theorist, but that's where these things start, right? It starts with one kind of thing and gradually goes down the road. And so it opens the door. I mean, if we're saying we can use it for this kind of thing, where do we draw the line? Only this kind of behavior, or can we move it into other kinds of behavior as well?
I don't want to go philosophy geek on you, but as usual, C.S. Lewis is sort of prescient here. He's seeing things before they happen, because essentially what he's saying is once we change our concept of what justice means, it opens the doors to all kinds of different conversations. He's saying we fundamentally got away from justice being the punishment suits the crime, and we started turning in the direction of sort of therapy, like how do we rehabilitate? Mm-hmm. And he's saying that's a different category of thing. We're not talking about justice anymore. We're talking about healing, and that's different. Let's keep those in different categories. They're two different questions. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that in our dialogue in America, especially, justice, the idea of justice has become more about, like, that word has even gotten sort of twisted and perverted so that we no longer agree on what would be just mm-hmm. or what does even the word justice mean. And so it does open the one thing we agree on is therapy. People need people need healing, right? Yes, like everybody loves healing, whether we're talking medical healing, psychological healing, emotional healing, we all like the idea of healing. And so if we can say this criminal is not a bad person, they just have the wrong brain chemistry and we need to heal them. And trust me, if we deal with them in this way, with this sort of pharmacology, it will make them better. Well, who's going to oppose that?
Right. And it's way more predictable than you're out in 20 years and let's just hope for the best.
So I'm interested to hear from, like, as we solicit feedback even on this podcast, I'm interested to hear from folks in the medical world or folks who sort of traffic in these areas, even in criminal justice, just to say, is there something we're not seeing here? Can you see a convictional Christian position that would agree with, hey, it's fine for us to give you neurocorrectives is what these medicines are called. If we need to If you're a sexual offender and us chemically castrating you would cause you to be way less likely to ever commit another sexual crime, is it in society's best interest to give you that drug? And should we, are we required to do that by the demands of love and justice? Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm just interested if there's folks out there that would say yes, I'd like to hear from you, because I think this is an interesting, it's a whole interesting area of ethics that I had not considered until I went down this rabbit hole the other day in my reading and pulled you guys into it with me.
But it is, I mean, you consider how much, you talk about the healing, but how much, you know, the big pharma and medicine and these kinds of drugs are becoming much more pervasive in their use. This is probably something that's going to be more and more on the radar. I don't think this is going to just be pushed kind of to the corner of the internet and dealt with in academic circles, and not, you know, neurocorrectives is probably going to be something that, hey, you heard it here, folks, on the Wednesday conversation.
We'll be talking about it 8 years from now.
Yeah, you'll say, hey, can you do a episode on this? But the other question, and this is completely just rolling in my head, I have no super coherent thoughts on this, but the spiritual aspect of this too. I think about the nature of sin. Can you give a chemical and make somebody, is this
less
presupposing?
Sinful.
Yeah. Is this presupposing that I can just give you a chemical and make you less sinful?
Yes. I think it sort of fits really well with moralistic therapeutic deism.
Yeah.
Totally.
And so that's the weird thing too. It's like, okay, if I have this sinful impulse, I'm going to give me a chemical and yeah, those things work where it can affect our body chemistry and the drive, but that hasn't touched my heart. It doesn't touch the sin nature in me.
Yes. Doesn't get down to the core. And I wonder if what we'll see. So I'm also geeking out on this book that I might have mentioned on the podcast called The Body Keeps the Score. I think you have read it too, Dusty. It's a book on trauma. And the author is a very well-known medical doctor who does all kinds of works with psychiatry of trauma. He has this whole chapter where he talks about like drugs like ADHD, drugs, Ritalin, and all these drugs that came prominently to use in the 80s and early 90s, especially with kids with sort of attention deficit disorders, and just we prescribed all kinds of stuff for those kids. And he basically says 20 and 30 years on from that, we're looking back at that and going, yeah, we weren't getting to the core of the problem. Like a lot of those were symptoms of deeper things that a lot of these kids were dealing with trauma, right? They'd experienced trauma in their lives and the ADHD was the symptom. And so great, we're treating the symptom, but we're not helping them resolve the deeper underlying trauma. I wonder, it feels to me like our society feels like that's kind of the best we can do. Since we can't agree on how we actually change the human soul or heart or core or character, the best we can agree on is, well, let's at least keep you from acting out violently again. And so if drugs can help with that, then great. And I'm wondering if we should see that as a really problematic moral compromise, or if we should see that as, well, maybe that's the best we can get in terms of where we can have common ground and agreement that, well, if we can reduce the rates of recidivism or of, you know, criminal offenders getting out and going back to a life of crime, then okay. I'll send you down the rabbit hole, listeners, if you want to go there. The C.S. Lewis essay is called The Humanitarian Theory of Punishment. I think if you just search for that on the internet, you'll find a free PDF or someone's put that out there. The website about neurointerventions is called neurocorrectives.com. It's a website of some academics who are doing research in this area, and so you can go read all the really scholarly research papers that are a little creepy and big brotherly when you read them. I'm not going to kid you. But this is one of those areas of ethics. What we try to do in this podcast is we just want Christians to be thoughtfully engaging culture. And I think, Chris, that you're right, that this is going to become more and more front and center in debates about criminal justice and in debates about what does it mean to rightly treat those who are offenders, both in terms of punishment and in terms of rehabilitation. And so to the extent that Christians have influence and power in these areas, we're going to need to think well about this. And so I hope what this does is at least put this on the radar as like, interesting that debate is out there. And perhaps some of you who are astute in these areas and experienced in these areas will go read some of this stuff and give us some thoughts, or even come on the podcast and talk to us about how the gospel would shape our understanding of something like neurocorrectives.
That's going to do it for today's conversation. If you have any thoughts or ideas, contact us at podcast@cdomaha.com. The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we invite you to listen in, and we pray that the things we're talking about might be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We'll see you again next week for another Wednesday conversation.